Talking Landscape Photography with Christian Fletcher and Carmen.
Want to score some free Lightroom presets? Go to lightminded.com.au.
All right, let's get on with it. On this, money. What are we doing?
It is party time. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Lightminded. Fletch, what did you reckon about our new intro, mate?
I loved it. I was a bit concerned about that strange voice towards the end there. Who the hell's that?
Sir Peter Eastway. Time is money.
Yeah, that's spoken like a true accountant. I mean, the guy's, he's a creative genius and a creative accountant as well. I mean, I think he would be the sort of guy you want cooking your books, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah? Totally. Talking of accounts, mate, I had an idea yesterday that'll make us millions.
Ah.
Yeah.
Far out.
And it's awesome. It is awesome.
Millions?
Yeah, millions.
Do we need millions?
Oh, absolutely. Because if we do, we don't have to do this podcast anymore. So we'll just be idle rich. So
okay.
I still haven't formulated the total plan. So I'll tell you what the rest of it is in about 20 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, good. Millions. I love that. And I don't think anyone will be too sad if this podcast dies and goes away.
Well, you know, all our friends will, you know, the six of them currently
listening. Yeah, mum and dad and, you know, all that.
What's been happening down in Dunsborough? You're coming to us live today from the Dunsborough Doomsday Bunker. But I'm hearing through the grapevine that you're going through a bit of an emo stage and you've decided to paint the gallery black. Is that right?
Hey, how did you hear about that? Yes. No, it's not all black. We've actually just upgraded all our lighting in the gallery. So we've got a mate in who's an electrician. Mm. And you always got to worry about mates, you know, because they... You know, they're all friendly and they do all the right things and they smile and you laugh and carry on. And then you get the bill.
Yep.
What the hell happened?
Yeah, one light bulb changed is like $400. Yeah.
Hey, what, 400?
Oh, that's happened to me. I had a mate change a light bulb, and I know it sounds really ridiculous, but there's a backstory that basically the ceiling fell down, so we had to get a proper, and we had to get a proper electrician out and charge $200 to change a light bulb. So,
Well, that's right. Well, look, so look, we've gone and done all our lighting up, and the place is really bright now. It's really light. Our electricity meter is going like crazy.
Oh, nice!
And I'm doing my bit for the environment.
Doing your bit for climate change. Direction. To try and change the climate. Yep.
Yep. You know, because of course we all know that climate change is a hoax, according to Donald Trump. Mm. And you know, we all know how much we can trust and believe him. But the plan is to paint the ceilings that there's three ceilings downstairs that are kind of two are floating and one's not. So I started painting one myself and that was great, but it took me all day and I had my head and neck bent in 45 to 90 degree angle from the rest of my body for hours and hours. And
can I just ask you?
It's got knobs on it, so I'm getting someone in to paint the rest. And so if there's any good painters out there that live in the southwest that are looking for a job,
get in touch with Fletch.
Good job to do it. You know, it's only size of a buddy football field in matte black paint, three coats. Painting upside down. I mean, it's a great job.
The Christian Fletcher Gallery, you're in Bay Road, Dunsborough, aren't you?
Dunbay Road, yep.
Dunday.
Yeah, don't go to Bay Road, Dunsborough, because you won't find us.
Anyway, if you've been to Christian Fletcher's gallery, and I suggest you do because I heard there's an exhibition this weekend, you'll know that there are incredibly high ceilings in that place. Mate, how did you do that? Like, did you just, you know, did you get the drone up there with the paintbrush or just a long roller? Or?
To be truthful about the matter, it's only the downstairs that we're painting the ceilings black. Because the upstairs one, it's so high, it's another story up. So the gallery is two story, but it actually could be three story. Mm. And we often have thought about, what if we just put another little stairwell in and make it the third story? Because it's such a big void.
That's a great idea.
But the other thing about the space is that we can never get it warm in winter because it's freezing. And of course, we went up into the ceiling and realized why there's no insulation and there's actually massive big holes. These vents at either end of the building, and they just let all the air straight through. It goes from one side to the other, I can sit in my desk and just I can feel the air coming up and out, and you know, out of holes everywhere. And it's like, oh man, whoever made this? Actually, I know who made it. And he knows he made it. And There was probably a few shortcuts.
It looks good, though.
It looks good. It looks great. And yeah. It's fantastic. But, yeah, mate, I've got a new exhibition coming up. So,
oh, yeah.
I wanted to I do this every time. So what's happening down south is there's a thing called the Margaret River Open Studios. And it's where all the artists open up their studios to the general public, because most times you don't just rock up to someone's house and check out their studio. But now, once a year, that goes on for 2 weeks, starting this weekend, and it goes for 2 weeks. And so we always do a new exhibition for that, for the opening. So that's happening. We're hanging the pictures on Friday, and they'll be up for the probably for the next 3 weeks, I reckon, maybe four, depending on how well it's received. It might be up there for a week, and then we might have to take it down because everyone just laughs and ridicules me, and you know, it's like when Beatles made that album. What was that album the Beatles made? And everyone went, "Oh, what are you doing?"
Oh, Sergeant Pepper is Lonely.
It's probably my Sergeant Pepper's moment, and they're going, "Oh." But no, I think people expect that from me now. It's my urban, banal, contemporary stuff, and I'm really loving it.
Do people ever go into the gallery and start heckling you? You know, like, "Oh, turn the saturation slider up, loser."
Yeah, every now and then you get someone they'll mutter, "Oh, it's just Photoshop." You know, anyone. The best one. I might have mentioned this before on a podcast a while ago, but the best one was this girl who said, "Anybody can do this with Photoshop and a fancy frame." So I thought that was a really awesome comment.
But she's right, though.
Yeah, she's right. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, had to, you know, hats off to her. Once I got past the initial rage and anger and frustration, I was like, "Oh, yeah, she's pretty right."
Heathens, people are just heathens.
But, yeah, we haven't yet to see her her brilliant gallery and her brilliant work. So I guess she's not anybody.
What sort of stuff is it? What's going in the exhibition?
Yeah, so it's stuff that I've shot in America and Cuba and Australia, and in some cases all in the same picture. So there's a few composites. And
so that girl was right. It's all about Photoshop.
It's all about Photoshop. She's right. But there's no frames. They're all mounted on foam board. So it's just the print. And the greats like Bill Henson will make prints, and he'll just blue tack them to the wall in a gallery, and it may be a little bit more sophisticated than blue tack, but he likes the idea that people can go up and, you know, sniff the surface of the paper and just there's nothing in the way of that. So we do this because it presents them quite nicely. You know, you've got the beautiful Canson. I mean, I use Canson's rag photographic paper, so this is beautiful matte paper. And there's nothing between you and the print. And of course, if you've got dirty, smudgy fingers, you've just been next door to Meal Up Cafe and you've had a sticky bun and a coffee and you've got kids that want to come in, feel free to not touch the photos. And
feel free to leave the kids in the car.
Some people do. You know, that's always, they go, "Oh, look, that looks like a texture.
I need to touch that."
That's like it's three-dimensional. Let's touch it to find out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it happens. I find sticky fingerprints in all the weirdest places, you know. Yeah. It's like, how did that get there?
What is that? Why do people think, I'll just let the, you know, because kids will be kids, you know, I'll just let them touch expensive works of art? Like, how does that sort of, I suppose, you know.
I think as long as they're not bothering them, they're happy. So this is the thing that my gallery sometimes to some parents is a massive playground for the kids, because you hear them. I'm sitting in my office and I hear these, and I just don't want to go downstairs and see what's going on, because I know that I'll be freaking out. But they run around all the partitions and they go up and down the stairs and they're yelling and screaming, and the parents are
it's our kids, they're just expressing themselves.
So it's a little bit odd. On occasions, you get a few delinquent parents that don't control their evil spawn, and you just put up with it. It's part of the deal. We're very open and inclusive in our gallery. We don't
But if your kids touch anything, they've bought it, basically. Now, look, getting back to the exhibition, you posted a thing on Instagram. It was a couple of weeks ago. We're recording this. It's the 9th of September today. And it was a piece shot at what looked to be a storage facility with an American flag out the front and also a polar bear. Is that going to be in the exhibition? Talk us through that, Fletch. What's that about?
Well, that image, let me think about that. I'm not a big compositor of images. I don't make these fantasy scenes up very often. I do it every now and then just for a bit of fun. And that one, that was all made up of images that were mostly from America, but there's also parts from Kangaroo Island, actually, in South Australia. So, you know, just finding these bits of buildings and then cutting them out and putting them into these scenes and trying to make them fit somehow. Mm. The polar bear was a big kind of icon that. Not an icon, what we call it. It's a statue. It's a sculpture. Well, you can't really call it a sculpture.
It wasn't actually there, though.
No.
Because it's very cool. Like, it just kind of works. And we'll actually put that shot on our Instagram, which is just do a search for the Light-Minded Podcast. But, mate, it just worked. And I looked at that and I just thought, I want that photo. But because it came from you, it would cost thousands.
Oh, man, I'll make you a special print. It won't cost you a cent.
Mate, the last time you made me a special print, remember that big one we did of the Burnap Forest?
Yeah.
I gave that to a mate, and just the backstory on this is a massive print. It's about 2 or 3 metres long and a couple of metres high. I gave that to a mate and said, look, you know, because I love your brother, this is especially for you. And he obviously wanted to get it framed. He just came back and he said, thanks a lot, mate. The frame was like $2,000 or something.
It was massive. I mean, if you give a gift like that to somebody, you're actually making them, forcing them to pay thousands of dollars in framing.
Sorry, go off on a tangent.
And actually, he actually sent me an email and asked me if what suggestions for framing. And I said, you know, well, she's good luck, mate. This is going to be, you know. And so that's what you do with your mates. You give them prints that cost them a fortune to frame. Oh. But that print, I mean, we shot that. You shot that. We were side by side, actually. We had our S1Rs out, the beautiful Panasonic S1R in the multi-shot mode. And the detail was staggering, as you know.
Yeah, it was stunning.
We loved that. And of course, I'm shooting with the Leica now, which has a similar mode, multi-shot. It's like, far out, you're getting these massive file sizes and this beautiful stuff. You're using the Panasonic lens, I think, as well, the 16 to...
Yeah, 16 to 35. Were shooting with Leica glass that day, I remember.
Yes, I was.
On the Panasonic S1R. But in all honesty, how does the SL2 compare to the S1R? Like, is it a similar sort of feeling, or are the files richer?
They're similar. But I mean, I do think the Leica has a slight edge. But maybe, I mean, you're picking, you know, picking hairs. Is that the term? Picking hairs?
Splitting
hairs. Splitting hairs.
Splitting headaches.
You're picking hairs out of your ears. Yeah. No, it's very close. I think the multi-shot mode works better on the Leica, and probably because they spent so much longer getting it out.
Well, they used the Panasonic as a test bed, I think.
Yeah,
they
don't know if they share technology, but they definitely are in an alliance with Sigma. Mm. Speaking of which, the new 85mm Sigma lens is out.
Oh, really?
In L mount, and it's half the size, half the weight, and just as sharp, apparently. So
really?
I'm thinking about doing that. So if anybody wants to buy a 85mm Sigma art lens with the Sigma mount, just send me an email. I'm going to sell mine for half price. That's cheap.
Joking?
And it's a ball-tearingly good lens. So, but I'm not using that anymore. So I want to raffle that and get the 85 for my Leica in L mount. So
you're going to raffle it this time, like the phase one? Actually, that wasn't a raffle, was it? It was a print.
No. Yeah. When I say raffle, that's like just I'm gonna sell it.
Yeah.
Basically, and it's going to be so cheap that people are going to jump all over it. So.
All right. Well, if you want to buy that, just how do they get in touch with you? Just the lightminded617@gmail.com?
Possibly not, because I hardly ever check that email, which is bad news, I know. Yeah. ChristianFletcher@westnet.com.au if you want a very cheap half-price 85mm Art Series Sigma lens with a Sigma mount. It's fantastic.
And that'll go on the Panasonic S1R too, won't it?
It's a massive bit of glass, and I just want to scale down to the smaller one.
Mm.
But, you know, some people have got big muscles and can carry these things. So, look, my exhibition, mate, it's that thing, that's that style I've been doing for a while now with that real pastel-y colours, the lightness, everything kind of tones in quite nicely. When it's all hanging, it'll be quite nice to look at. And they're all, it's called commonplace. So it's kind of play on word, as in like it's a common place and it's commonplace. You know, something that we look at and we see every day and we go past and we don't give it much thought.
Mm.
So this is about finding those little hidden gems that are all, you know, they're in our backyard that we drive past and we miss and don't give it a second thought because it's not a rainforest or a waterfall or a, you know, mountain range. It's a, you know, bunch of crates sitting in the corner of a back alley and stuff like that. So
or
all the things I really love.
Any car keys?
Finding.
Any car keys there at all?
Car keys, yeah. No, not car keys. I started doing car keys when I was 18 and I got through one set of car keys and sort of thought, well, I've done it now.
That's
move on.
That's the idea. That's the completion of my idea.
Hmm.
What we do, you've heard of the Golden Shopping Trolley Awards? What about, is going to work brilliantly because there are all our Victorian brothers and sisters are in isolation at the moment. Yeah. What about we do a photo competition?
Yep.
The Golden Car Key Awards. That's it.
I love it.
That's what I was thinking about. We'll do a competition and anybody can enter and it's only $500 an entry and we just make millions.
Yeah. Well, and the winners, they have to be a set of keys that to an exotic car. They can't just be, you know, your standard Holden Commodore keys or the...
Or it could just be the most crap car.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like a Skoda or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and but you know, obviously the winner's has to be, you know, it's got to be a Rivian or a Tesla or
something cool.
Sorry?
Something cool, and maybe they can just borrow the keys off their mates. Mate, let's do it. And you know what the prize can be?
What?
31 free Lightroom presets.
Yeah. Of which a couple of them are really awesome.
Yeah, they are. There's one there from Tom Part, which is Aerial Awesomeness, which I've used a couple of times so far, and I've sold prints off that and made thousands already.
Yeah, right.
There's one there that emulates a... makes your camera look like a 5D Mark II. And look, speaking of which, I had a chat with a dude during the week, and his name is Peter Pad Thai. Now, you've got to check out this. Peter Pad Thai. All right. He's got a YouTube channel, so do a search for it now. It's called Adventure Seeker. So he and his girlfriend travel around Western Australia, and it's just, you know, they do camping. And, like, it's proper outdoor stuff. Like, it's kind of like... Russell Coit, but it's not funny. But he's West Australian. It's a fantastic video series. Check it out now, Adventure Seeker. But the reason I mention him is I said, what sort of camera gear do you use? And guess what he said?
5D Mark II.
Exactly.
Far out.
Yeah.
Far out.
Yeah. Legendary.
Well, that's probably why he's travelling Australia, because he obviously can't get gainful employment with a camera like that.
But his videos are amazing, so go and have a look at his stuff. Sorry, mate, sorry to change the subject, but yeah, let's do it.
But the 5D Mark II was the start of all that really cool stuff with video.
Yeah, it really was. Like, it was the original cult camera, and they actually, I know we sort of make a big joke out of it and all that sort of stuff, but you remember that show House?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they shot a full episode of that on a Canon 5D Mark II. So it was, you know, back in the day, it was a kick-ass piece of kit.
Oh, and also, I think it was the first Captain America. They used some 5D Mark II footage in that.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, look at that. I mean, thank you, Canon, for bringing video to the masses. Yep. And you know, it's a bit of a shame about your recent stuff, but you know, we won't go there where we can't.
Ebbs and flows. But let's do a photo competition. What do you reckon? So people in ISO can take photos of their car keys, send them to us, and we'll.
I'll give them I tell you what. I mean, it's not the greatest prize in the world, but I will give them a free subscription to my training site for the best set of car keys sent in.
Really?
Yes. Yep.
That's worth $100 a year.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
No, it's good. Actually, we should see if we can scrounge up some more prizes too. Like, we'll just ask around and see what we can scrounge up. Yeah. Who can we get to judge it?
Peter Eastway.
Yep.
He's got nothing better to do.
No, he actually doesn't. So, yeah, Peter's perfect. And what about Tone?
Tony, yeah, he could judge it as well. He's got nothing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, that's all that. I mean, I'm sure they would be keen. And we probably need to get them both on together to announce the winner and to, you know, critique the photo.
Okay.
So it's got to be creative. It's got to be a set of car keys that we haven't seen before.
Mm.
And they've got to tell a story, a message. That, yeah. You know, there's got to be some way of putting a set of car keys in a scene and making it look awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it could just be one key.
Yeah, right.
You know, as long as it starts a car.
And it doesn't have to be for a supercar, does it, really?
Well, yeah, it'd help.
What about a Vespa? You know, what about a scooter? Because that's environmentally... Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, I don't think we'd... So, Carmen, what have you been up to, mate? Have you been out taking any photos? What's the deal?
Look, I haven't, to be honest with you. I've been in that place where I guess a lot of people go creatively just nowhere. I've just been in a creative void. And, mate, what is that? Is it because we're, you know, just coming into spring, or I just look at the camera and I just go, I've just got nothing. And what I did try a couple of weeks ago was... And you started doing it was that Ruben Wu stuff with the drone, and we tried that. A mate of mine and I in Perth, myself and Dr. Clark actually went to the DNA Tower at Kings Park and got the drone up there at dawn, so you know, inside legal hours and all that sort of stuff, and got some light painting shots, and they just came out rubbish, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like we got up early and did all this stuff and did all this planning, and it just came out rubbish.
What sort of lights have you got on the drone?
We used just a torch. I've forgotten the name, but basically we just taped a tactical flashlight onto the drone, which was quite a bright torch, but that was probably another issue because it made the drone quite heavy and it was unstable, so...
Yeah. Well, I've tried the torch and that worked okay. It was pretty bright. It was my bike torch.
Mm.
Because it was strapped to one leg, it kind of made the drone fly a little bit funny.
Yeah.
So my mate Mark gave me his Loom cubes that he got that was specifically designed to stick onto the landing skids of the Phantom 4 Pro. So and they're really bright.
Mm.
And they're quite a... wide beam, you know, not very direct.
Hmm.
And, so that's what I used. Of course, we know that, I know now, that flying at night in the drone is a no-no.
Hmm.
And you can fly half an hour before the sun comes up and half an hour afterwards.
Hmm.
And I think that's still possible to get that, to get the lighting effect. So the idea is that you want to create the... So this is my workflow. Mm. This is what I've done recently, is I get to the scene where I want to photograph. I set my tripod up and I fix everything. I focus on the tape, so a rock. So this is what I did with Canal Rocks. And when I was down there recently, focus on the rock. Then I start taking photographs before the sun goes down. So I'm getting different light on the rock and just shooting through until it starts to get to a point where you can actually see the light of the drone.
Yeah.
And you can then go out there and fly. So people sort of go, oh, how do you get a perfect circle? And it's very simple with the drone and with the Phantom, and I'm assuming it's the same with the Mavic and stuff, is you set the point of interest mode, and which is in there, and you set the point where you want it to fly a circle around, and then you move out from that point and to a certain distance that you want the diameter or the radius of the circle, and then you press the play button, and it'll just do this perfect circle, and it'll just keep going around in circles until you tell it to stop. So you obviously, the sun's gone down, you've got half an hour, it's obviously not super dark, but it's dark enough, and if you you need to take your aperture, make your aperture smaller, because basically you just want to try and capture that light. And then once that's done and you're within the legal limits, so you then land your drone, keep your camera there, and then start doing your later shots, your darker shots. So you do your stars and all that sort of stuff, and then you just post that in post-production. You just bring that all together and then create your effect that way. So that's the way to do it, and that's what I've been doing.
Yeah,
and it works really well. So
yeah,
saying that, I'm kind of getting a bit bored with it now. Sort of done it. And unless I can start creating some more interesting shapes, so I've got to experiment with the waypoints function and try and create, squares and triangle shapes. And Ruben Wu's definitely done that. He's got some really interesting shapes and stuff. So
none of this is new, is it? I mean, we're, and I believe Peter Riesway said that, this was done even before Ruben started doing it, so...
Yeah, I think it's one of those, someone came up with the brilliant idea of putting a light on a drone and using that to light portraits even, it just that enables you to get a nice bright, and a flashlight. Maybe that's a way of doing it, having a really bright flash, or if you can get a bright enough a strobe and a trigger, and you can just set your drone in the right position, and
good thinking.
And if the light's bright enough, you can overcome daylight, and then that will give you that darkened effect anyway. You obviously won't be able to get that kind of circular. But look, I thought about this. How good would it be to photograph a tree out in the middle of nowhere, and just use that like a flashlight or something to add that lighting, but from a particular angle. An angle that you can't get any other way. And I think that's the beauty of having a drone, is that it's opened up so many ways for us to photograph.
Well, it's just a mobile light source, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And it just hovers there. So you can put it in the position and then shoot away. And I kind of like that extra use for the drone. And so, drones are... whether they are here to stay or whether they'll eventually get banned.
I think they are here to stay. And look, just on that, there's a whole bunch of new regulations coming out. You're going to have to register your drone soon if it's over 250 kilograms. If it's under 250, don't quote me verbatim, but I don't think it has to be registered.
250 kilograms? That's a quarter of a ton.
That's a big drone. 2.5 kilograms.
250 grams, or
2.5 kilograms, and I think if it's under 250 grams, you won't have to register it. But you don't have to do anything now. But this is all being rolled out this year, apparently. But don't quote me. Make sure you do your research on that. But you know what? I was inspired. You posted a shot during the week, because I know you went and shot some wildflowers last week.
Yes.
You posted a shot of canola field during the week, and I had a look at that, and I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if it had a burning tree? You know, like Murray Frederick's style.
Yeah.
So I actually put out some feelers to a few farm buddies and that sort of stuff. And I said, look, I've got this idea. Like, I want to have a burning tree in a canola field.
Yeah.
And guess what they said?
Can you say it on live no. podcast?
So it rhymes with good luck. So, but that didn't happen. So, yeah, that is, you know, that's when I talk about being creatively void. Basically, every idea I've had has been shot down, or everything I have done has sucked pretty much. But does that ever happen to you, Christian Fletcher? Do you go out shooting the wildflowers and have an idea in your mind of what you want to achieve, and it just turns out to be total shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Quite often. Yeah, all the time, actually.
Do you get that too?
Yep, it's normal. It's just what happens. And what was I was listening to something the other day. Mm. They talked about the people that are the most successful, the ones that make the most mistakes. And, you know, and if you're not pushing boundaries and making mistakes, and if you're not doing things that don't work, then you're not trying hard enough. Mm. So I think the harder it is to photograph something, the better the results are going to be. And the more unique and original it'll be. So I'm always thinking about how I can make my shoots more difficult. And the first step is obviously getting out of the car.
Mm. And that's a big one. You know,
but I'm still struggling with that because
what if there's a headwind?
I enjoy just winding the window down and shooting from the car window.
What if you get out of the car and there's a headwind? Then it's just...
yeah, well, you know, that makes it so much more difficult. But, you know, I... saying that, if you come to my exhibition, which opens on the weekend,
which everybody should,
2 or 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks,
everybody should.
Most of that work was shot from a car window. So, and I've got some great shots. In fact, I'm just thinking about it now. Yeah, there was a couple of times when I got out of the car, but a lot of it's just from the car window, and you know. Does it really matter? No, it's about the final image. And I always say this, it's like, it's not about how you got the image, it's about the image.
Yep.
And people composite stuff and they put things in, take things out, they darken, lighten. It doesn't matter. None of that is, to me, none of that matters. You know, it's not National Geographic. We're not trying to show a true representation of the scene. As long as you're honest about what you've done and how you've done it, there shouldn't be any problems. So I like that. So, you know, it doesn't matter. You know.
What are your top tips for, you know, shooting from a car?
Well, there's a couple. When I bought my Leica gear, I was speaking to Nick Rains and I said, I'm gonna get the 16-35 and I'll probably get the there was one other lens I think I was going to get. And he goes, what about the 24-90? I said, nah, don't know if I'll get that. And he goes, mate, that's the lens that you want, especially for what you do with your urban stuff. That's the lens. And it sure is. So first tip is get a lens with a focal length, something like that. I mean, the 24-90 Leica lens that I've got is just perfect. Mm. Because when you're driving, sometimes you'll see cool stuff on either side of the car. And sometimes you have to shoot through the passenger side. So, the first main tip is get a car that's got electric windows because if you have to reach across and wind the damn thing down, that can be a problem. And that's more work than you really want to have to contend with.
Well, I don't think people have wind-up windows anymore. Really?
No, funny, my son saw one when he was a little kid. Because I borrowed a mate's van, and it was an old van, and he said to Dad, "What's this thing?" I said, "That winds the window down," and he was like, "Huh?
What?
What? Yeah." So, so shooting through the passenger side, you need a bit longer focal length, so you can zoom in and avoid the window frame. Mm-hmm. Although some people quite like the window frame, you know, that adds to their effect. And if it's a contemporary sort of style photograph, hey, who cares if you've got the window frame and the revision mirror in there or the side mirrors, it doesn't matter. But that is one of my top tips. Another one is be aware of camera shakes, so make sure your shutter speed's up or your ISO's up enough to allow you to have a faster shutter speed. And my thing specifically for that is shooting square on to your subject. I love and by creating an image that has no real perspective, it makes it look more contemporary. I think it's like flat, the side of a building, and generally in post I'll go in and I'll straighten up all those crooked lines if there is any. So straighten up your horizon line, straighten up your verticals, and then it becomes this graphic. And one of my favorite images in the exhibition, which is coming up, is I call it Dew Street. It's a corner of a street corner in Adelaide, in just some back alley, some semi-industrial area on the edge of some suburbs. And it's basically a cream building with a blue sky, a window, and a sign. And I got it fairly straight, but in post I just straightened it all up perfectly, and you know, lightened everything. I did my teal and orange last, and then blended it on screen, and then pushed that in and out with the opacity just to make sure I was light, because it was contrasty. It was the middle of the day, so there was a lot of dark contrast, you know, in the shadow areas. Not even though there weren't many shadows, and you just want to lighten that up so that it looks kind of pastel, and the shadows are there, but they're not real heavy and dark. And I think this is where I see people that try this style, that, well, in my opinion, they don't go far enough with getting that midtones up and getting rid of some of those dark shadows. It's to get that illustrative sort of cartoony effect, you need to really strip a lot of that contrast out, still have the darkest darks to have some bite, but everything else has to be really light. So that's a couple of things I think about when I'm doing that sort of work. And the beauty of it, you can do it on any particular day, but a sunny day is better than a overcast day, in my opinion.
Can I ask you a question? How does the Christian Fletcher mind work? Like, do you go through life just seeing compositions, or does it just come to you?
I do actually. I see angles and corners and you know, pretty much whatever I'm doing, wherever I am, if I'm walking, walking the dog, or I'm, you know, driving to work, or you know, delivering a picture somewhere or whatever, I'm always looking for a composition. Well, it just appears. You know, it's like you're going along and then suddenly you see something, you go, oh, that's a photo, and I'll either have the camera or I won't. And, you know, most recently when I went up to do the wildflowers, I was coming home and I had the day to get home. So I was just constantly – I'm probably the most dangerous driver on the road, because I'm constantly looking left, right, and just looking. Every hill you go over, you get to the top of the hill – you look to see what's on the other side. You look, because you got that bit of elevation. You see what's there in the farmland. Is there a line there between the crops? Is there a windmill? Is there something that can look interesting? And I'm always looking for it. And it does. It's either there or it's not. And that's why I love doing this contemporary urban stuff, because seriously, I mean, you guys in Perth have got it made. And I think anyone that lives in a big city has got it made, because you can really just get in the car, put your camera next to you, and just drive around and look, and just look for things. Don't worry about what it is. Look for colours and shapes and compositions, and, you know, things that you can make beautiful from the most mundane, boring subject. I mean, it doesn't matter really what it is, and that's why I love, you know, cities and industrial areas, and, you know, even those old, not every suburb, but a lot of suburbs, the old suburbs in Perth, have got those old shops, you know, they're like the corner stores and stuff. And some of them are really cool architecture, you know, it's got that real 50s and 60s sort of vibe, even 70s. So they can look amazing. And I remember seeing an exhibition. That was a competition, and a guy had won this competition, and he had photographed some of the old, you know, delis on the corners of buildings, corners of suburban streets in Perth, and he done them really well, really stylized. And I just thought, wow, that's cool. That's unique. Because and this was way back before I was thinking about this contemporary work, you know. There's a couple of moments in my career when I looked at an image and thought, that's friggin' brilliant. And I remember one way back when I was back in the days of film. I went into this. There's a lab that I used to use in West Perth. For the life of me, I can't remember the name. It wasn't West Churchill. Perth. It was another.
Mirage or something? Or
It could have been. Yeah, possibly. I walked in there and they had this black and white photograph on the wall, and it was of some sort of like big kind of wheat silos or sort of big tanks. So it's some sort of tanks. It was a black and white shot. And I remember looking at the tones in this shot and it just struck me. And I've made a couple that are kind of similar and I've always loved it. But at that shot, I looked at it and went, freaking hell, that was probably the moment where I thought, I need to get my quality sorted, because I think I might have been shooting with a 35mm SLR at that stage, Nikon, and thought, no, I need to go to medium format to get that quality, because I remember looking at the print going, that's just so the tones are so smooth and creamy, but there was so much contrast and so much detail, and I thought, oh, man, that's it for me. So, you know, throughout your career you have these moments where you see something that sends you down a different path and makes you realize what quality is. You know, this is, you think you're doing okay until you go, oh, okay, all right.
But the interesting thing is, I mean, there appears to be compositions everywhere. Like if you look at somebody like Liz Barker's work, she seemingly makes something out of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, look at what she had to work with. I mean, she was stuck in a hotel room. And all those cool things that she created, I mean, some were composited, obviously, but all the elements, she only had a certain amount of elements and she just created art from that. I love that. Look at our good mate Andre from LA.
Andre Duman, yep.
And he's done his exoskeleton project.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, you're talking about a little bug, but how good are they to look at? And imagine seeing a massive print of that on your wall. So, you know, you don't need to leave your backyard, really. I mean, I can go outside now and find some flowers or some weeds or whatever.
But that was
I can go into the kitchen and find an old buddy collie flower or something and photograph that.
Or go into my kitchen and find some dishes.
Some what dishes?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, don't you have a dishwasher?
Well, I do, but just, you know, sometimes forget to use it. But look, on to Andre's stuff. He sent me a message saying his exoskeleton stuff was out. He probably sent you the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, we're looking at it on an iPhone screen, or in your case, you know, are you still on Huawei's now? Oh, you're on the Samsung, aren't you?
Yeah.
But you're looking at a phone screen, and there is, how many shots does he take in that focus stack? Like,
it was 6,000.
6,000. And I'm just looking at his stuff on Instagram going, that's just incredible. But like you said, imagine seeing that as a print, you know?
Massive big print.
I hope you saw those.
And he did that in his garage.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to travel far to create some brilliant stuff. And I've in the past gone around down the yard and clipped a few flowers off some natives that we've got growing and stuck them, you know, in front of a white background and use my studio lights and photographed them and I like it. You know, there's some cool stuff that you can get from that. You know, using a macro and all those things, getting in close, looking for birds. Look at what Georgina does with her birds. I mean, I've got
a
bush around me, and I have to say that it's friggin' hard.
Are the birds actually alive? I mean, they move so fast.
I'd have to kill my birds to make my shots look like hers.
Yeah, incredible.
I can't get that freaking close, and I haven't got that much patience. I have to say, though, I was up at the Coal Seam Conservation Park with Mark last week, and I this little red robin thing pulled up next to me, and I was walking, and I had my big Leica lens on, but it's only 280 mil at the longest focal length, and just little Robin just started hanging out, and I was like, okay, move slowly,
yeah,
point it at the bird.
Yeah.
Go to focus, boom, gone. And it moves over to the next one. It's like, okay, turn around slowly.
Yeah, you can't do it.
The bird, boom, gone off again.
No, no.
And I'm like, oh.
No point even trying. And it was like when we spoke to Georgina, like she tried to deny it, but she is a bit of a bird whisperer, isn't she? Like she is bird boss, you know. Yeah, I see them, yeah.
I want to actually, it would be good to go out shooting with her and just get her to bring the birds in and we can just, you know, stand behind her and just get all the shots. Mind you, she is talking about what she had a 600 mil with a 2x converter or something.
Yeah, but she also has taken some pretty iconic stuff on the iPhone, which I just find amazing because, I mean, I'm struggling to take a decent shot of my car keys on mine. So, she's got a special, it's a special empathy. I was going to say apathy, but she's obviously.
She's got a talent.
Oh, I didn't tell you. Guess what I bought the other day? From a swap meet.
What?
A leaf blower.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, Rick DeCuna's
photo. Ah, yes. That's right. Remember talking about Rick about that.
Yeah. And he got on the stepladder and he's got his dad to, you know, hold the leaf blower and threw some leaves up in front of it.
Yep.
I'm going to try that. Rick, if you're listening, I'm going to try that.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, see, inspiration comes from everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe you throw your car keys in the air and get the leaf blower onto it.
Mate, I'll tell you what, if I did that, that would win the competition. Hey, can we actually enter our own photo competition? Or
I can't see why not.
Yeah, right. See why not. Yeah, because that would win.
Our rules, our comp, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, yeah. How much should we make entry, like $500 an entry or something? Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
So everyone out there, $500 or one Bitcoin. Whatever is the most expensive.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's fair enough too, because that's the reason, like, you speak to people like Peter Eastway and you say, look, you know, you've got this photo, you know, it's betterphotography.com photo awards and, you know, you must be making millions, Pete. And, you know, it's always a hard luck story, like, oh, you know, I'd be better off doing tax returns and doing this. And I know why, because he's not charging enough to enter.
Yeah.
Just make it $500 and then, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, Pete always says that, you know, how do you make $1 million as a photographer? And the answer to that is start with $2 million.
Yeah, that's quite true.
Yeah.
That is actually quite true.
And actually, speaking of competitions, and of course, everyone will want to enter ours because ours is going to be the best.
Well, it's only $500 an entry.
Yeah, at $500. But you can enter the International Landscape Photographer of the Year Awards, one of Pete's competitions that's coming up. Mm. I think that closes soonish, so you might want to get out there and get amongst that. The Pano Awards have closed. That'll be announced soon. I'm sure there'll be some brilliant stuff there. Mm. And other awards are there? Any? I mean, Shopping Trolley, I'm not sure what's happening. I think we're going to speak to Ben soon.
That's,
Ben Walton from Team Digital, and we're going to ask him what's happening with the Shopping Trolley Awards, because that's always a bit of a crowd pleaser.
Maybe we can combine that with the Golden Car Keys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Ben, if you're listening, we are joking.
Yeah,
it's a joke, mate.
That's right. What about the competition?
No, we can't. I mean, the Golden Shopping Trolley Awards is, you know, it's up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, the Car Keys Awards, well, you know, they'll still be talking about it in 50 years, but it's nowhere at the moment.
Right. Yeah. But the one of the, and you can have a special category, photograph the car keys with a 5D Mark II.
Yeah, the thing is, not many people have 5D Mark IIs now, you know. They're pretty hard to get and, you know, because they're so cultish.
That's right.
You just can't get
some
one.
Some of the people that use them.
You get onto Perth Gumtree or whatever and, you know, it's you expect to see them there for $1,000 or something like that and, you know, you just can't find them anymore. Yeah, so I've got one.
Yeah.
I'll have it forever.
So you found any cool Photoshop tricks lately, mate?
Not really. I've just obviously been. I've got this whole thing where I'm wanting to move from the Adobe subscription platform.
Yeah.
If you like, because you know, look, I appreciate their stuff is okay, but I resent having to pay a monthly subscription. I worked out the other day how much I've spent on Photoshop and Lightroom just over the last 5 years. And it's just ridiculous. And I think Adobe are taking the piss a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I appreciate that people like you and Peter Eastway and all that sort of thing, you know, a subscription to that is, you know, it's not that big a deal, and it's a tax deduction and that sort of stuff. But what I've discovered along the way is there are a lot of photographers that, you know, are doing it a bit tough, particularly at the moment, and that, you know, sort of $15 or $20 a month is a big deal. So I've been working on sort of getting out of that architecture. So that's why I've been messing around with Affinity Photo. Also in recording software, I've been messing around with different types of recording software. But I haven't really been doing anything in Photoshop. I'm just trying to get away from it, if that makes sense.
Well, tell you what, I did a workshop with Les Walkling about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that was on 3D LUT Creator. And Les was talking about Affinity Photo, and he was saying how much he loves it. And I mean, he has no love for Adobe, and thinks Photoshop is broken. You know, it's been broken from day one. And he talked about the thing that he loved about Affinity Photo was if you wanted to create an adjustment, you can make it in whatever color mode that you want to be in. You want to, whatever you want to use. So, like,
sRGB.
If you wanted to make an adjustment in LAB mode, you can do that. So he talked about a curve. You know, if you want a curve, you can do a curve in LAB mode or CMYK or any other things. But in Photoshop, you have to convert that file from RGB to LAB.
Yes.
And then if you start putting these things on, if you have to flatten it if you want to go back to RGB again. And you know, but of course so he says in Affinity you don't have to do that, and I think that's brilliant. I haven't actually used it enough. We've got a copy each, haven't we? So we've got to get into it. I'll have to get you to teach me how to use it, mate, because I haven't looked at it hard enough yet. I've got too many other things on my mind.
It's pretty easy. I mean, I find Photoshop really complicated, and I'm not sure if I'm just dumb, but it's hard. And then, I find myself watching tutorials all the time just to do basic stuff because you forget basic parts of the workflow. You know how you chuck together a composition or a workflow or whatever, and you miss one part out of the chain and nothing works? So you have to go back through the chain and discover what you actually missed, and it's YouTube tutorials, and it's just too hard. It's clunky. You get charged for it. I'm just going to have a whinge too about Adobe, and if you are listening, you need to take this sort of stuff on board. But I had the situation once where my Adobe subscription was debited from a credit card that I had. I lost the credit card, so I had to actually cancel that credit card. So as a consequence, Adobe couldn't deduct money from that credit card. So what they did is they just cut off my subscription, right? So nothing worked. And then I had to get in touch with them. It took ages to get, get them in a call center and that sort of stuff. And they said, well, look, I'm sorry, but because you've let your account go. And I'm like, yeah, I let it go because I couldn't pay for it because my card was canceled. And they said, well, instead of paying $13 a month, your subscription is now $15 a month.
Really?
Seriously. And I'm like, you've just got no choice because you just can't do anything. So you just have to pay it. And then you look at something like, I was pretty upset about that, but you just get over it. But you look at Affinity Photo, and we reached out to those guys saying, look, can we try it out? We'll mention it on the podcast. So, if you're listening to this now, download yourself a copy of Affinity Photo. It's $50. And we spoke, just via email to their marketing manager or one of their development managers. And so, they're in England, and it was just send him an email saying, look, can we do this? Yeah, sure. And does your software do this? And it's just, you're actually talking to a real human being. and the thing is, it's $50, Fletch, forever. Forever's.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, and look, the other program that Les loves and I love is 3D LUT Creator.
How much is that?
Ooh, I can't remember.
Not much, though, is it? Actually, I'll just have a look.
Maybe $150 or something like that. But again, it's a one-off payment. And look, what you if you want to do any color editing, that's the program to use. It's just so good, it's so amazing what you can do with it. I did a whole workshop with Les, and so look, if you're looking at that program and you want to know how to use it better, get onto Les Walkling's website. I think it's leswalkling.com.
Wow.
.au. Yep. But look up, type up Les Walkling, W-A-L-K-L-I-N-G, and get onto one of his workshops, because that'll put it all in perspective, and it'll make you realize that Adobe is broken in regards to color, and these other programs just allow you to to have control over these colors better than anything else, and it works seamlessly. You know, you can go in and out of Photoshop. It creates a LUT file that you can then adjust in Photoshop if you want to. It's just remarkable what that thing does. You know, it's such a complex program too, and the guy's a genius who made it.
It's $250.
Is it 250?
$250. So you can have that and Affinity, $300.
Yep.
Yeah. So why?
Yeah, because it works with Affinity as well, I believe. So, yeah. So, yeah, good stuff, isn't it? Oh, well, so much, mate. So much out there. So many ways to make an image. But then you could go back to basics. You could just have one camera, edit very minimally, make a nice print, put it in a nice frame, and sell it on the wall.
But see, to do that, I mean, you're still using something like Lightroom, aren't you?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, forced to get Photoshop. And
I mean, Lightroom does pretty cool stuff these days. I mean, Capture One, Peter Eastway just does most of his editing in Capture One these days.
Does he?
Yeah, and he doesn't use Photoshop for much at all. Which I've always, I guess, I've been stuck in Photoshop for far out, 15 or more years.
Yeah.
And so I'm used to it. You know, you say you find it complicated, but I look at it and go, I know everything about that. So, but I do know what you're saying about missing a step and then nothing working. And that can be frustrating, because that happens to me as well.
I thought it was just me. Like, it's like, I'm doing everything they said in the tutorial and it's just not working.
Yeah, that's right.
But I am dumb.
Tiny thing that they either forgot to mention, or you've just kind of done slightly the wrong way. But yeah, it's all like that, mate. But otherwise, you know, in the end, what do we do this for? What's it all about? I mean, are we?
What's about art, really?
You know, we're not changing the world, are we?
We're
just taking photos and making prints.
Yeah, that's actually it's interesting that you put it like that, because sometimes I think we tend to overthink things, but at the end of the day, that's all we do.
Yeah, you know, we're not doing much more than that. I mean, some people will disagree, and look, one thing that art brings joy to people.
It does.
You know, it enriches your life to be surrounded by art. You have to have walls that are covered in art is so much better than just something a blank, you know, bit of gyprock. So art definitely has a purpose and a place in society, and artists do have a responsibility to say things through their art.
Do they? Do they really?
And art can change hearts and minds. Whether I do it or you do it, that's, you know.
But you look at some of Banksy's stuff, and I'm a huge Banksy fan, as you know. And sometimes I just sort of think, you know, it's just too political.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. You know, an artist has a responsibility to portray a message, and that's what makes the piece. But sometimes, you know, maybe a cigar is just a cigar, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess depends on your political leanings. I mean, artists generally tend to have more left-leaning views, and it's usually about social justice and equality.
But why is that? Why do you think people in the creative space, if you like, are generally left-leaning? And just to qualify that too, I'm from broadcast radio, and most of my colleagues were left-leaning. So, you would say 95% of people in any sort of on-air creative role are probably left of centre. And I wonder why.
I don't know. Maybe it's the side of the brain that you use. But,
of course, not me. I'd vote for Donald Trump and have a gun. And,
well, we know that. It's obvious. I don't know. Maybe there are a lot of right-leaning artists. I think that we kind of need to be towards the centre. But if you're left-leaning, you still need to understand why people feel like they do on the right. And if you're right-leaning, you need to think about what's going on with people on the left. So we just got to find common ground, don't we? And I guess sometimes art is there to point, to state the obvious, because sometimes people don't get it. And it comes down to, you know, empathy and your beliefs and whether if you care. I mean, conservative people are generally fiercely loyal, and they're maybe
a bit selfish.
People, they're good people.
Maybe selfish too.
Sorry?
Look, I've discovered that, I know of a few rich people, and mate, they're just selfish, you know?
Yeah. Well, there is that. Mm. There are, but, you know, you get a lot of people, conservative people generally have a lot more fear than people that are less conservative, and they fear change, and that can be,
because it directly affects them. Whereas somebody that leans to the left, it has more of a holistic outlook. Well,
they're probably more inclusive of the community and everyone and the whole kit and caboodle.
Mm. We're not attacking right wingers or anything like that, but. That's just it's part of the makeup. If you're conservative, you're probably more concerned about how the politics directly relate to you. Whereas, if you are of the left, you're more sort of looking at it as a whole, like how it's going to affect society. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I've got right wing mates and left wing mates, and I love them both. But
I think artists are a little bit airy fairy at times, and it's because we're doing something that is. It's creative, and it's not business. It's not about business. It can be about money, because obviously you want to do your art and make money. But most artists will do their art irrespective of whether they make a living out of it or not.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Because it's a beautiful thing to do. I mean, creating things is a pleasant thing to do.
And if they get, you talk to somebody who sold their first photo, okay, I remember when I sold my first photo. I mean, I just couldn't talk. I got a couple $100 out of it. And I'm like, I just sold a photo. Somebody actually just liked my work enough to actually pay me money.
Yeah.
And that could have been $200,000. It was just the best feeling on earth, like selling your work. I mean, you'd almost, you do almost do it for free, but, that's... the reward is obviously if somebody buys your work, but it's just creating it. And if somebody buys it, it's just icing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's why you want recognition for what you do, and whether that's ego or something else.
Still can't believe I sold that photo.
Well, you have to put it up on Facebook on Insta, mate, to show us what you did.
It was it was Dome Cafe in East Frio.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
At dawn. Anyway,
I remember my first photo that I sold as well.
Mm.
Can't tell you. I remember that I sold a photo. I can't remember which one it was now.
Yeah.
But it was an old black and white thing from way back. But yeah, we do art, and we want people to like it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have social media accounts, and we wouldn't have Instagram, and Facebook, and Snapchat, whatever else that we would use. So we're all, searching for recognition, I guess, in some way, shape, or form.
And look at you now. Now you're doing exhibitions, and, how's it going to go? I mean, because obviously the interstate borders are open up here in WA, so you actually should get a few people down there. But do you get, the masses of people in the gallery on the weekend, do you think? Or
yeah, it's been great. I mean, local tourism has just been booming. And I was actually just speaking to someone today who's a finance guy, and he said he was talking to one of the restaurateurs down here, and he's never been busier. Every night's fully booked.
Really?
Everything is just booming. And it just goes to show how many West Australians actually travel overseas and spend money in other countries.
Yeah.
So, look, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's good to have both. Mm. And I'm sure we'll get to a point where everyone's sick of coming down south or going up north and they'll want to travel and go see things overseas, and that hopefully will come back around and – But I saw another interesting statistic the other day in that somewhere, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, they said that global emissions have reduced by 4%.
Yes.
The start of COVID.
Yes. Well, we've seen some amazing things, haven't we? And it's, you know, like Tony Hewitt said, and I don't know if he borrowed this quote off somebody else, but it makes perfect sense. Like, even if you don't believe in climate change, you know, why not do the right thing anyway? We've been forced to do the right thing. And we've got the situation where we're seeing photography coming out of India where they can actually see mountains.
Yeah.
You know? So, as, yeah, it's, there's a silver lining, you know? Yeah.
There's some good, there's definitely some good that's come out of it, but
yeah.
There's some pretty awful stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's, yeah, it's terrible. And just, you know, reading about India today and that sort of stuff, and they're going to surpass the United States for cases very shortly. And it's,
yeah. Right.
It is, very, very challenging times on the brink of, you know, Cold War 2.0 with, you know, another country that I don't really want to mention on the podcast. And
mate, we've covered some subjects today, haven't we?
We have. Yeah, we certainly have.
From buddy, you know, from art exhibitions to left-wing, right-wing politics.
Yeah.
Coronavirus. Seems like that's what everyone talks about these days. And
I'm bored of it, aren't you?
I'm bored of it. I, you know, it'd be nice to get back to some sort of normality. Or, but then this is the news. If we didn't listen to the news and watch the news, then we wouldn't have so many concerns. Maybe,
mate. What do you look on tape? Okay, on the record. What do you reckon is going to happen? Like, how is this going to play out
in the world with coronavirus?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they will get a vaccine or something that they call a vaccine that may or may not work.
Well, they've made a vaccine in 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's safe to use.
So, I don't know. I don't know, mate. I don't know. I haven't read enough about it, and I doubt that they'll get anything that'll be that effective.
Yeah.
And if they do, you know, will they make you get it if you are going to travel anywhere?
Yes.
Overseas,
they
or
will. Going, yes,
you know, that's, you know, and start to take control of that, and they have this power to you know,
absolutely,
you know, if you don't get it, you don't get the jab, you're not going to go visit Melbourne, or if you come, you know,
yep,
you know, come back from Melbourne. I mean, yeah, so the government can make you do anything, really.
Well, they've already started softening us up on that. You know, yeah. There's been language coming out, you know, where it's, oh, this will be compulsory, and if, you know, and then that gets denied and it goes away and then it comes back. So it'll be a situation where you're forced to. And look, I'm not anti-vax or anything like that by any stretch. Mm. But when you've got the situation where they're creating a vaccine for something that's, they've never created a vaccine for ever before in the history of humanity ever.
Mm.
And they're developing it at record pace. I'm not taking it seriously. I'm not going to take it. And I personally reckon, and I hope we don't get hate over this or anything like that, and this is with respect to, you know, people that have had COVID and have gotten very ill and unfortunately passed away. Like, this is no, I'm in no way diminishing that, but I think this is just going to fade out by itself. Like, it's just going to reach a critical mass where, unfortunately, you know, some people will unfortunately pass away. But yeah, I just can't see how a vaccine's going to help it. And even, you know, I've spoken to medical people about this vaccine. I've got a couple of doctor mates, and they're saying, you know, well, look, you know, even if the vaccine's only 30% effective, it's, you know, it's still 30%. And I'm like, well, I'm not taking that, you know.
Mm.
And I don't mean, yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that I'm anti-vax, but I'm like, you know.
Well, you want it to be proven to be safe, because who knows what the long-term effects are or what other side effects. And
well, maybe if they, you know, rolled it out over years and tested and tested and tested and. But just, you know, rolling it in months, you know?
Saying that, mate, I'd be first in line to get the Russian Sputnik 5 injection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely get that.
Doesn't sound sus at all. Taking it, and she's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't even know he had a daughter, but I'm assuming he has.
Nothing sus there.
And I kind of seriously doubt that maybe she did take it. That seems a little bit convenient.
Hmm.
Yeah, bloody Putin. Anyway. All right, mate, we should probably go off and be creative.
Yep.
Get less political.
Well, you can, yeah, you can be creative. I'll try.
No, you are creative. I mean, you're a buddy, you're the guy with the golden tonsils, remember?
Oh, stop it. It's so true. It is so true.
Yeah. All right, well, we've got some good, we've got some great guests coming up in the coming weeks.
Yes. Yes.
With some big news from some of them.
Yeah, we've got, Murray Fredericks, the Flame Tree guy, is going to be joining us soon. And yep. He's got a project on the go at the moment, which I can't talk about. He's told me about it, but I don't want to let the cat out of the bag because I don't want anything getting in the way of his project.
Mm-hmm.
But it's awesome.
Yeah.
So he's coming out. Who else is coming up?
Well, we've got a couple of other guys that I'm reaching out to that have been, photojournalists and covering war zones and conflicts and disasters, and they will have some amazing stories. I did reach out to Jason Boland, but I haven't heard back from him yet. And he is an amazing stills photographer for the movie industry. Just recently did the stills for Mulan, and which has been getting a bit of controversy of late. So anyway, but that would be a good story to hear about as well. So, yep, stuff coming up, mate. As always, we've always got something to say.
I reached out to Peter Lick today too.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
Oh, not well at all.
You just got to...
Yeah, message bank again.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's probably risking his life to take some photos.
I'll risk my life to take these photographs. Okay. All right, mate, let's wrap it up. Listen, we had this, occasionally we do get complaints on this show. So I made this up during the week. Have a listen to this, Fletch.
Did you hear something you didn't like on today's show? We'd love your feedback. Call our customer service department on 555-749-28, then press hash and dial 578-6968-424-678-896 and wait for the tone. Then enter 434-278-908-757-6587-580 during business hours and leave a 4-second message. You're welcome. Calls to this number are charged at flat rate of $5 per minute.